This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Good morning, good morning. You are here live with Dr. Jeff and my favorite guest host, Mike O'Hearn. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Captain.
So first of all, happy Father's Day.
And happy Father's Day and Grandpa's Day and everything.
And our pet dads too. So I'm waving hello to everybody. The first to join is my sister. Hello there. And JB, how you doing? So here for you, here for your pets. You know the drill. Notice a different studio here because I'm here live with Mike at Mike's studio, which is way more sophisticated than mine, and with all the stuff that he does online. Anyway, you know, I have to tell you, if you don't know Mike O'Hearn, he is former, you name it, Mr. Universe, Mr. Apollo everything, right? And when I first met him, he's scary. I walked in, and he's doing sets with 3¼. Now, mind you, when I was lifting, and that was a long time ago, my max one was 3¼. He's doing it like it's nothing. So anyway, I often said, and this is what impressed me so much about Mike, is that as big as his muscles are, his heart is even bigger. And when I see how he is so crazy about dogs, and that's what bonded us, and we've been friends ever since. I try to do as much stuff as I can with him. He tries to help me with my social media because I suck at social media. So we figured it'd be really fun. This, by the way, is the anniversary of my 500th show on Pet Life Radio. And so we want to do something special. And Mark Winter, amazing producer, he says, Jeff, you know, let's get something special, something going on. And I said, okay, I got it. Mike O'Hearn, because he is, not only has he got 3.6 million followers, but he is such a dog lover, such a big heart. And who better to share this momentous occasion with than Mike? So anyway, my other sister's there. Hey, B. So I'm just trying to wave to everybody. Steve, my brother-in-law, who happens to be my high school classmate also. So tell me what's going on. Everything good?
Everything's good. We just got back. And I'm glad I got to be here for this event.
Thanks.
And again, thank you for the kind words. But you truly, I think everybody that's here today can understand. And you know I am a dog person. But I think society in general, one of the biggest things that they have to find is a good vet. And one thing I got lucky with was meeting you early on. And you are truly amazing, not just as a vet, but as a human. And I truly see why you fell in love with your craft, I would say.
Yeah.
You've got a gift for this.
Well, I love it. And just another quick story about Mike. So Mike is and his wife are filming something. They were in Detroit. And I called him last week to tell him that it was in my 500th show. I'd love to have him come on as my guest host. And I said, when are you coming back? He goes, we're due back on Sunday night. I said, oh, what a bummer. You know, I was hoping to have you come in. And I hear his wife in the background going, we'll be there. This is the kind of guy he is. He changed his plans just to come and help me with this, you know, great show. And I am thrilled. So let me get your questions. I want some things we can talk about. First of all, you know, some quickies. May as well talk about Father's Day. Yeah, everyone's getting together, hopefully. You'll spend time with the family, probably, hopefully have a barbecue. There's going to be guests coming over, family coming over. Be careful with your dogs, because we know how dangerous some of the things that we eat easily, and it's not good for our pets. Okay, for example, if you're going to chop up some onions to put on those hamburgers, raw onions, not good for dogs. It could be toxic. But one of the biggies is, and this is something that I hear all the time, and I see it. I've seen it with my own dogs, and that is corn on the cob. Harmless. Corn is great for dogs, but not the cob. Because what happens is they don't know to separate the corn kernels from the cob. They get that thing, and they have an opportunity to get that thing out of the garbage, and they will literally not only try, they will swallow, if you cut it into like thirds or halves, they'll swallow that cob whole, gets into the stomach, no problem. But after that, disaster. It might make it through the stomach into the intestine, which you think is good. No, that's bad. Because once it gets to certain parts of the intestine, that cob is so big, it literally comes to a dead stop. And it causes many problems, of course, vomiting, of course, blockage. But the only way to get it out is surgery. What a bummer. You're going to start the day with family and friends and have a good time, Father's Day. And then guess what? You got an emergency with your pet. So be really, really careful. And also, if any questions coming up on pet life, now's the time. So, all right. So since no questions, I wanted to, first of all, something happened to be funny this week. You know, I always say, if you have a veterinarian who's never been bitten, okay, what do you have sickened thoughts about that veterinarian? Because, you know, me, I'm in the face. I'm getting kisses. I'm getting hugs. I mean, of course you're going to, you can't help but not, if you're not ever been bitten by a dog and you're a veterinarian, you've been like practicing like 5 feet away from the pet. That's not good. That's not what we want. We want to see a veterinarian who's engaging with the pets. Anyway, so I've been bitten several, I can't count anybody, but always minor stuff. I fortunately have pretty good reflexes. So a major bite turned out to a minor. But last week, this is crazy.
Is that because the dog, and I know we say this a lot, no, my dog doesn't bite. And then there's the one time it bites. And so they're already stressed out going into the clinic.
Uh-huh.
There's something wrong with them, or they wouldn't be there most likely. Unless you're a parent like me, I get stressed out about anything. But so you got all this aspect, and then you have the veterinarian almost down into the face.
Right.
And so what can they do besides just having a great vet to try to de-stress, if that's an okay question to ask here?
Well, yeah, it's a great question. So first, as we know, many of our dogs that seem to be great and happy and social, when it comes to a veterinary setting, first of all, there's a lot of other dogs. And, that's a great question, Beth. My sister Bethany, dogs on trampoline. We'll get to that in a minute. So with stress, yes, even the sweetest dog can become not just a sweet dog. So it's very important to able, of course, to breed the dogs. But pet parents also know their dogs. In fact, they know their dogs better than we do. So if they know from prior experience that the dog is tough, either give the veterinarian a warning. I have dogs that I would be given the warning. They weren't bad enough to eat a muzzle. But, you know, you just hand them a little bit differently. So that's okay. The first bite, both on my thumb. How terrible is that? And I'm a lefty and my left thumb. But anyway, that's just Murphy's Law. But so I knew he was tough. A French bulldog, all right, and potato. And my friend Brooke owns him. And I know from history, historically, this dog is tough. So a basic exam, no problem. Start poking and prodding, big problem. So anyway, I am sitting there with him. And I know we're trying to take an x-ray. And there's no way. There's no way. We can't turn this guy to the side. Possible. All right, let's get a muzzle. Putting the muzzle on. My text couldn't put the muzzle on. I said, okay, look, he knows me better. I'll put the muzzle on. Well, he knows me. He just doesn't like me that much. So sure enough, putting the muzzle on, he turned around as fast as lightning and got my thumb right there. You can see it right there. It's all sort of different colors, blue, purple, green, whatever. I think I'll save the nail, but I thought maybe I'd lose the nail, but I'm going to be okay. So then later on in the afternoon, I went to my son's house to say hi and to see my grandkids. And as I'm walking to his house, I see this couple walking, a really cute, of course, Frenchie. And I, you know, I'm the Frenchie doc. I see somebody Frenchie. So I said, okay, I'm going to go say hello. The guy right away warns me. He goes, no, he is not friendly. Okay, so I don't go to him. I figured, well, you know, usually you call the dog to you. If they come to you and they don't say, then they're, you know, they're on and off. So anyway, I just kneeled down. I put my hand out to go like this. And he comes right over to me, gives me a little nudge.
Bay.
Right on my same thumb. I was totally worn. It was a strange dog. Didn't know who it was. I thought I can win him over. No, not this one anyway. So anyway, very, very funny. So, hello, Terry. Okay, let's get some questions here.
Yeah, there was a great
about trampoline. So dog trampoline is the new rage. Is it dangerous? My thoughts. So, you know, as with anything that is, you know, if you look at some of the dogs, for example, Bells and Malinois, that will be put through obstacle courses, okay? It's amazing what they can do. So, you know, I think that really the important thing is know your dog. You got to be careful. Start slow. Can they hurt themselves? Of course they can. You see so many videos of dogs on trampolines on Instagram, right, and TikTok, and they're having a blast. So I think it's very individualized. Don't think, however, because you saw that dog on TikTok do it, that your dog can do it. It's something that you got to test them, start slow. And then, I mean, think about it. Titan is how old? My son is Titan. Okay.
6 years old now.
Now, physically, he's 12.
Yes. That is true. That is true.
So he, you know, to look at a kid like this, he can do anything, but even something new for the first time.
So that leads me to the question, because I think that's a great question. But it can be used as a metaphor for all aspects of how much can you let your young dog play, knowing it's young, but there may be some later consequences to the fact of playing so hard. It seems to me dogs over 40 or 50 pounds, it's the shoulders and the hips that go later on. And,
right.
And I go, well, what could we have done to minimize that damage later, earlier, when they are so active?
Exactly. And this is why, and it's a great point. So I see a dog, a golden retriever puppy, running alongside a guy with a bike, right? And I'm thinking to myself, don't do that, because it's been shown that over-exercising, you want to get this Rottweiler, for example, to be the biggest, baddest Rottie on the block. So you're going to muscle them up. You're going to feed them as a young pup. These can all lead to problems down the road. So you got to be really careful. You want to start slow. And for example, puppy dogs that are large breeds that have a tendency to develop elbow dysplasia and hip dysplasia, those are the ones you need to be even more careful with. And start them slow and don't let them run that long. Wait till they're fully grown. You know, the growth plates have closed, the joints are developed, and then you can start getting on an exercise program. So like anything else, trampolines, something. Look, I don't have a trampoline.
I think this might help both people and dogs is the fact, and I agree, and you and I have talked about this tremendously, because I tend to go with the Huskies and the Akitas. So they're a little bit of a larger breed, but again, it comes back that I find that it's the hip problems, the joints as life goes on. And I think I made some mistakes doing the bike early on, and you go, Mike, it's just like people. It's just like lifting. You can't have your son lift like you lift.
Yeah.
That's going to cause damage. Maybe not now, but later on.
Right.
And so I think it's great for people to understand that. And I think, like, the, you know, Instagram is so easy to go, I want my dog doing this. I want my dog jumping up off the side of the roof. Those dogs are so amazing. But again, just like anything, be smart about it, right? You've lectured me. So I'm guilty, guys. So to understand this, I'm guilty of being the, I always say I'm a great, I love dogs. I need to learn to be a better dog owner. And that's one of my mistakes.
And this is a good point. And that is that I made mistakes too, because remember one thing about, in general medicine, every 5 years, half of what was gospel is obsolete. So there are things that we didn't know back then. So we were doing it. And then all of a sudden, some new study comes out and finds out that, oh my God, that's not good for your pet. So all of us are probably guilty of doing things that probably we shouldn't have, but that's what learning is all about. You make mistakes, you learn from your mistakes.
I have one more question from my fans over here. So thanks for jumping in. They go, well, Huskies do the races and everything. Isn't that, it's the Husky that is setting the pace, not you riding the bike setting the pace. And that would be the difference, right, between the two. So to answer your question, yes, Huskies are really strong dogs, but they're setting the pace where the person riding the bike is going too fast and tugging them along.
And a point that I really want to jump on now, because that's a great point, is here it is summertime. We're exercising with our dogs. Remember, we have dogs that overheat. And the thing is, if you're hiking your dog, they are so loyal to us, they will do anything to keep up with us. Mm. And so if you don't read your dogs, if you read their body language, if you read their panting, touch their gums and feel if they're getting dehydrated, and don't stop frequently in the shade, have water with you, then they will overheat. Let them determine how fast and how far they should go. And when you see them stop, read them and stop along with them, even though you're not ready. And anyway, with that thought, we're going to take a quick break here on Pet Life Radio, and we're going to continue here on Instagram and right back after these short messages. And once again, thank you for everybody at Pet Life Radio, 500 shows. Mark, that's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Oh, sure. It's all fun and games until someone ends up in a cone. That's right. We are animals. Deal with it. Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're live. So back to life. So we got a really good question real quick on a break, and that is, the dogs that have a limb amputated, do they get phantom pain? And the answer is, I have no idea, because we can't ask our dogs. We can't tell always. So, but it's a good question for neurologists. Is it possible? And I will come back with that. Second, next one. I have a kitten that had nucleation 10 days ago.
Can I come off of that question for you? And this is something, again, I learned from you. And we learned this in a heartbreaking way, my boy Elvis, is that pain animals treat pain differently than humans.
Correct.
Humans complain, I got this bad hip or knee and stuff, where animals, it is bred into them, and you taught me this, and I didn't think of this, is that they can't show weakness, because if an animal shows weakness, they are now prey.
Correct.
And so I feel that I kept my one pup, Elvis, around too long because I thought he was still moving and wanting to move, but I didn't realize he was moving because of me, because he wasn't in pain.
Right.
And I think this is a great one for you guys at home, just to understand that you answer this. I'm not the expert here. You're much better at
it. No.
How would you?
You have to look at their appetite. Look at when you're not around, when they're not trying to be with you. Are they moving? Are they getting up? Are they sitting in one position? When they do get up, how slowly do they get up? Is it like an old man gets with creaky bones and creaky joints? You have to read them. But, you know, one of the things, and we're going to talk about this. In fact, we're going to talk about it pretty soon. We may go over today. I hope you stay with me because there are a couple of things I want to talk to Mike about because we're going through it. Anyway, kittens, when there's a drainage, it depends what the drainage is. If it's clear, when you do an enucleation, it's very important to take the lacrimal glands with you, the tear glands. If you don't get all of the tear gland, especially one in the lower medial canthus, the inside lower part of the eye, which is the main one, then it's very possible that they might continue to tear. So if this persists, and sometimes the eye socket fills up and the doctor puts a little needle into it and just tears come out, then unfortunately, it means that you got to go in and get the tear ducts too, the tear glands. It was a teaching hospital. Ah, interesting. Well, I hope whoever did it was learning or learned already, but that's something to just be aware. Okay, Clint Hubbard, Kaylin Hubbard, my female Yorkie had surgery Thursday, mammary gland tumors removed. My vet removed two nipples, believes it's cancer, just waiting for the results. Looks like it hasn't spread. So, see it amazing? Yes. When you have mammary glands, if you don't clearly have a separation between a mass, it may not be a tumor, maybe something other in that area, and the nipple, then you might be able to just go after the mass. However, most of the time, it's clearly adhered to part and parcel with the nipple, and therefore you want to get both. And again, they don't need them anymore. So you're better off taking more off and not having had to than taking less and found out you needed to. What does that mean? Another surgery. So since that neither one is going to be used anymore, if there's any doubt, take wider margins, whatever it is, and just to be safe.
I have another question for you real quick. If your dogs go hiking, is there something that you can do to make sure that, because if they're going into the mountains all day long, like one day a week, ours goes for an 8-hour hike.
Wow.
How can we prevent or should we check for ticks and fleas when they get back on those days?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. First of all,
be the protocol.
The first protocol is get your dogs on a flea and tick medicine.
Okay.
Sooner than later, like now. And when people ask me, say, when should we start our flea and tick medication? I said 2 months ago. So, you know, very important. Be careful. There are, I'm not going to mention brand names, but I'm going to mention drugs. Okay. Fipronil and imidacloprid. That used to be the cat's meow. They were the best and very effective and very safe. Are still very safe, but they're no longer that effective. In fact, I have dogs coming in that have been on, these are the over-the-counter medications that you can now get at Costco or any drugstore. Look for the active ingredient, fipronil and imidacloprid, I-M-I-D-A-C-L-O-P-R-I-D, imidacloprid. They are still out there, but they're 20 years old. An insect doesn't need 20 years to develop resistance. An insect can develop resistance in 5 years. So you just have to know that. You want to look for the newer medications. They're called isoxazolines. Now, there are some others that are out there that are still pretty good. And so if you don't want to get the isoxazolines, or you have to get it through your doctor, I think the other ones also come through the doctor. But you have four isoxazolines. You have Bravecto, you have NexGard, you have Credelio, and Simparica. They are all effective and safe. However, just threw in there, some dogs that have a tendency towards seizures, it has been shown that these drugs, or one, not all of them, one of them may initiate a seizure. So you got to be careful. Speak with your veterinarian.
So you're saying this isn't something we get to choose or not choose. This is something they should do.
Yes. If we are this time of year, and whether you hike or just going outside, fleas are everywhere. So for that, yes, flea and tick medication. Now, many of them actually we don't have a big problem here in Las Vegas, but your followers are everywhere. What I would recommend also in many parts of the country, and certainly spring and summer in the Northeast, a big problem are mosquitoes. And mosquitoes carry heartworm disease. Now, three of those Sacsagilians have a version that has three things: fleas, tick, and mosquito. So heartworm prevention. So what I would do is talk to your veterinarian, but I would get one with all three.
I thought that was a choice kind of thing. No, my dog's fine. I don't need that. Yours, like, it's better to be safe.
And ticks, for example, especially in your breeds, they have such thick coats. They have a tick eaten away and you don't even know it. So it's better to be, in a case like that, better to be safe.
There's questions for you. This is an important one, I think.
Sure.
A woman has to check herself to make sure there's no lumps. And you just said my dogs have a lot of hair. Should people that have dogs with a lot of hair periodically check for tumors and stuff?
Of course, tumors. And also, one of this question I thought you were going to go through, shaving them down. All right. You think, oh, well, they have so much hair. You said, no. The truth is, the hair, it's kind of like a thermos with a dog's body. If you put something cold in a thermos, it keeps it cold. If you put something hot in a thermos, it keeps it hot. The hair does the same thing. It regulates the dog's body temperature. So it will actually keep them. If their body is cool, it's 100.5 to 102.5 is normal temperature. Maybe they get excited, hot, 103. That's the job of a good coat. So even though it's hot out there, it's that coat is going to keep them. And if it's cold, like it's winter, of course it's going to protect them. So, and not only that, because of a dog's coat, that coat is always protecting the actual skin. You shave a dog down, and now that skin is exposed to the sun. There are cases, of sun-induced irritation, sun-induced cancers, believe it or not. So don't think that, if you want to trim, we call it a summer trim, just keep a healthy coat and you'll be way ahead of the game.
I'm learning a lot today. Right. Thanks for doing this here.
Oh, this is great. If we have no questions, I want to talk to you about Panda. And something that comes up to me all the time, and I've been through with you a number of times already. At what point, when a dog is getting old, or a dog has a tumor, or a dog has some disease, even not associated with age, just a disease, at what point, what do you look for as a pet parent to be able to make a very tough choice? Because when you are emotionally attached to your pet, it's very hard to make an unemotional, logical decision. Logic is thrown out the window when there's emotion involved. So people ask me all the time, how do I know? So my simple answer is, you'll know. And when you know, it's probably that for a reason. I'll give you some criteria that I like, and you and I have spoken about this. And sadly, I think we're going to have to speak about it again sooner than later. And that is, first of all, people, I say this, look, you don't have to answer these yes or no to me, just things to think about. All right. First of all, is your dog happy? Okay. Eating, still eating. That's a very important one. When someone tells me their dog seems to be animated, but hasn't eaten in 4 days, and I'm giving them everything, the dog is losing weight, to me, that's a big concern. How about when you look at your dog, do you feel sorry for them? When the disease, whatever it is, prevents some natural bodily function, okay, that is necessary for survival. Is the dog living or just existing? If this were grandma, would you be considering full-time nursing care or a nursing home or a nurse coming in? If the answer to a lot of those is yes, then maybe it's something to think about. Well, obviously, does the dog appear to be in pain? If there's a pain that is not, cannot be remedied through medication, that's a big issue when it comes to our dogs. And it's so hard. I tell you one thing, that my very early in practice, a woman came in and she wanted to put her dog to sleep. I listed the dog. The dog was fine.
I know this story.
And I said, why? Well, I'm moving. And the place I'm moving to doesn't allow pets. I said, well, we can help you. I work with rescue groups. No. This dog won't be happy with anybody else. Really? You know that two of my five dogs are rehomes and they're thrilled to be with us? I've never heard this thing. So anyway, I said,
this lady was the cat's meow. She thought a lot of herself.
So anyway, I then said, well, look, you don't want to be there when I do it. My plan was this. I'm a genius, Jeffrey. I'm going to take the dog to the back. I better think that we're going to put the dog to sleep and have her sign out, and then I'm going to, of course, find a home for this dog. No. I want to have her in my arms when we say goodbye. And at this point, I was young, very stupid, and I was working for somebody else. But I didn't know that I could actually have a say and say, no, I will not do this. And with, you know, sort of hesitatingly, with, you know, a lot of guilt, I brought the dog in, we put the catheter in, and we said goodbye. And afterwards, I don't think I slept for a week after that. I said, I am never going to do that again. I don't give a damn what the client wants. If I don't think this pet should be put to sleep and you do, go someplace else, lady. I'm not doing it. And that has been my philosophy ever since. And it's been, you know, 35. I've been practicing for 40.
I want to stop you for a second, just so everybody understands this. I've known you for well over a decade or so, even longer. But this story was one of the earliest stories I learned from you. And I know that it sits on you because you've had to do this. And that's why I never wanted to be a vet, is I don't want to have to put a dog to sleep. And you've done that so many times. But this one resonates with you because of the fact that you did it at such a young age that it stayed with you.
Right. And that I didn't know that I could say no.
Right. And I know we're talking about this, and this is the hardest thing for any pet owner, is that making that decision. Is there anything else? Because you were saying earlier, is the dog happy? Or is it your interpretation of the dog's being happy? Could be, right?
Right.
Do you feel sorry for your dog? Well, that's a tough one because of the fact that if I know she's sick, I'm already going to feel sorry for her.
Right. Right.
So you're a great judge, and the vet should be a great judge. And this is just for anybody out there that has a vet. They should be, at that point, somewhat of a counselor, not just a doctor,
and right,
talk you through this process. Is there anything else that you think you could tell them? Because, like you said, we may have to talk about this again soon. Panda has a growth with inside that we can't stop.
It's a very large rectal mass.
And at some point, that mass is going to block everything.
Right.
And as of right now, we think she's very happy.
Right.
She's eating like more than I do, and I eat a lot. But it's interesting. So for you fans at home and people at home, you dog owners, make sure that you really listen to this part of it, because this is, it's not black and white. It's not that simple.
Right.
There's so many factors in it. And just to recap, you said, is the dog eating? Remove yourself from the situation. Is the dog eating? Is the dog happy? What are some other tops?
So is it happy? Is it clearly in pain?
Is it moving somewhat well? Obviously, it's older.
Of course. And in her case, which is why I mentioned it, if the problem, even though she might be eating and she could get up, but in her case, she cannot poop anymore because the mass is literally right in that rectal area and it's getting big. Or is there such discomfort when she tries to defecate? Is she, you know, screaming in pain? Does she think? It's really, really tough because to look at her, as I walked in today, she ran right over to me. She's jumping up, you know? She's like the happiest thing in the world. So when I saw her, you guys were away, I said, no, right now she's not ready. I did a rectal exam. It's plenty open.
I didn't hear this until now. So just so you know, I got tingles, and I'm happy that my girl's all right now.
You know, she's got that little smaller that was bleeding. I said, that I can remove. That is, it's part of it, but it's removable if it continues to bleed. Has it been bleeding or no? Okay, so this is something that we can remove. There's no way you can remove the mass. And I know the specialist who I sent you to felt the same way. No way. It's pretty bad. But these are the kinds of cases that we have to deal with, and it is so difficult. And in answer to your question about, people ask me all the time, how do you do it? How do you put pets to sleep? When I do it, because of these criteria, and I know it's the right thing to do, and I'm not emotionally attached to this pet, and I have many, many over the years that I've been emotionally attached to my own pets. You have to use logic over emotion. But as I say, euthanasia is a gift. It's a gift that we can give back to our best friends, our pets, to help them not suffer, to let them go peacefully without pain into that, as they put it, the rainbow bridge. And when you approach it that way, where you know it's something that I'm giving back to them to ease their discomfort, to ease their pain, to help them to not starve because they stopped eating. And as a payback for the many, hopefully many years they've given us and put smiles on our face and been our companions and have been loyal, they deserve to be able to go out peacefully. And that's kind of how I look at it. Is it a rationalization? I mean, of course it is, but it works. And now, having told you that story, I will only do it if I truly think it is the right thing to do. And there are cases that come in, there's black and white, but there's a lot of gray. Whereas I think it will be, where I say to the client, if you're ready to do it, I'm okay with it. I see enough of my symptoms that would throw me to say, I agree. But if you're not ready, I don't think the dog is suffering. In which case, you want to give more time, go give it more time. You want to wait for your kid to come back, you know, college and say goodbye, then it's okay to wait, you know, a few days, a week, a month, whatever it is. So my bottom line is it's never an easy, well, I shouldn't say that. Occasionally, it's an easy decision, but that's rare. Usually, there's a lot of gray.
It's an easy decision. It's a heartbreaking move.
Right.
And that we're not going to erase.
Right.
It goes along with it.
But right now, from what I see today, and as long as she's doing her thing, she's not ready yet. But you know, another thing about having a disease like this, and this is a very large mass and it's growing. And as I was explaining to Mike and Mona, that tumors grow by doubling. And that's the thing. Tumors don't have a shutoff system. So if you put tumor, regular cells in a Petri dish, as soon as they fill the edge of the Petri dish, there's something mechanically within inside of these cells that stop them from growing. All right? Tumor cells don't have that. They ignore it. So what happens is one cell becomes 2, becomes 4, becomes 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? But there's microscopic cells. You don't even see them. But once they hit critical mass, which is, they say about 500,000, a half a million cells, in that same doubling phase, might be 2 days, 5 days, or whatever, depending on the tumor, all of a sudden that half a million becomes a million, the million becomes 2 million, 4 million, and all of a sudden people say all the time, God, but I mean, 2 weeks ago, I didn't feel it. And now look at it. So when we get to that point, we know that, yes, it's going to grow. It's going to grow fast. And these are the things that we have to just deal with. But knowing that, at least knowing the criteria, knowing what to think about, you'll have time to deal. And sometimes there is no time. Someone comes in with a problem with their dog, stopped eating for 2 days, and I could see a huge spleen erupture.
Don't go there yet.
Yeah, right.
Because okay. I want to ask you this question, and this is going to be the tough one. You had a talk with me, and you said, in layman's terms, before and not late. And it was the point of before it got so bad, instead of waiting until the dog was in so much pain. Can you kind of talk about that? Do you remember that we had that kind of talk with about Elvis? Because you go, there's going to be a moment where it's still before that this is the time to do it, not late.
Right.
Where the dog has been suffering for weeks. It's in pain for weeks. And I think, again, like you have something that sticks with you for life. And I think being so young with Elvis, I didn't make the decision until it was late.
Right.
And I live with that today going, I see videos and I'm like, gosh, did you not see this? Did you not, you dumb kid? I kind of look at it and go, man, he didn't deserve to go through that extra pain. So how do you?
It's a very tough one. And I learned this again, you know, we never stop learning. One of my colleagues, friends, is one of the co-founders of Lap of Love, and they do house call euthanasia. And I've listened to her speak. I was in one of her talks at one of the conferences. And she says, you can never make a mistake by saying goodbye a little bit too early. But you can make a terrible mistake by waiting too long. That has stuck with me also because I see animals coming in that are, I mean, literally skin and bone. And the owners want to still do more fluid, this, that, the other. I'm trying to say, no, this dog, it says suffering.
It is just the owners.
Yeah.
Because,
right.
And I'm there, I'm guilty of it. I know that.
But because, again, it's for you, there's an emotional attachment. And I look at it, I can separate myself because I didn't grow up with this pet. I didn't see this pet every day. So this is why I am very cognizant and listened to Danny speak that day. I left with that saying, you know, I made that mistake. So now I tell clients when we're getting close to the end and they're starting to show some of these symptoms that we talked about, don't wait till she's lying on her side. She can't even get up to go to the bathroom. That's not fair. Especially, I remember when we had to put down one of my dogs, my Labrador, he was having trouble getting up and it slowly went up his spine to the point where he couldn't use his back legs, front legs. I brought him in and I was working with a board certified surgeon at the time. And we did a myelinem. So you put some fluid, a dye fluid into the spinal canal and you take x-rays. Now this is before MRIs and CTs. This is going back many years. And sure enough, right in his neck was a big tumor. And as soon as I saw that there's no way I can get in, and he was also 13 and 12 years old. No one's going to do surgery to take out a huge mass, probably part of the spinal cord itself.
That night,
I took him home and I put him to sleep. I just knew it.
So again, there's that moment before, They're still happy. They're still good.
He was happy. He would still eat, but he couldn't move. So he would eat. And then when he would poop, right, he was army crawling to drag himself away because he was such a clean dog. And you could see he was miserable. He didn't want to be that dog. And he, you know, a Labrador, they thrive on their arms, their legs and their, you know, front legs, back legs. And they love to run and they love to chase and they love to do athletic things. And he was like in a straitjacket. He couldn't do anything except look and breathe and still eat. I said, no, that's not my dog. I wouldn't do that to him. So it's tough.
Just for anybody at home right now, I know it sounds like, okay, these are pretty, yes, I will make that decision. I will be the good dog owner and I will do this. It's not as easy as that. It's still hard. It's still tough to do that decision. But if you can, and you taught me this, and it was so great, I have to remove myself and my emotion. I'm still going to get crushed and hurt.
Of course, you always will.
But what's best for the pet?
Right.
And that's the whole point of this discussion right now is you got to be able to make the best choice for your pet and don't be selfish.
Correct. Exactly. Don't be selfish. And it's hard. You know, again, it's easier for me, as I said, as an outsider, but I know it's hard. I don't think there's a dog lover, anyone listening, anyone watching that hasn't have been faced with this issue. And it's tough. So, on that note. All right. So we've overstayed our welcome here. Let me just see.
Done that?
Yeah, pretty much. My sister, right? That's how she got her dog. Let me see. There was another question. I want to wave. Hold on. Oh, more waving. Hello, hello, hello. There was a question about a feral. All right. Feeding a feral cat. This is from Hardwick. Gave him an oral flea med once a month. Good. What is something from your line? Oh, I can put in the food to enhance his quality of life. Well, I do have a body boost, but it's really meant for dogs. I don't have a cat product, but there's something called Petinic. There are different products out there. There are multivitamins, either in a liquid form or chewable, that you can crush up in the food and at least do something for the cat. I mean, it's a feral cat. I see you can't trap him. You get close enough to him and he runs away. I know it. I have my cousin who does this. She's in Florida. And when she lived in Hawaii, she had a big colony. I would get calls from her all the time. How do I do this? These cats were afraid of humans. I get they're feral. So that was the only thing. Look for any kind of online, any kind of cat oral vitamin supplement. And that would be a good thing to do. And if it looks like an older cat, maybe switch him to a food that's a senior food or a kidney food, because we know that the number one killer of older cats is renal disease, kidney disease. You got a question?
I do. If we have time, I'd like you to talk about separation anxiety that dogs have with owners and if we crate train them, how that may help. Because I know that we ran into that again. I've run through all this, guys. So I'm a helpful hint. We couldn't leave Elvis, and so it became a stress case within days. And crate training, you told me, would teach him to be able to go by himself alone when he's younger, and that will go through his whole life where he can be calm and cool at home. Because I have people calling me all the time and asking me, my dog's freaking out every time I leave. He's tearing up the house.
Basically, separation anxiety is almost like a dependency where they become so dependent on you, on us, the owners. And at the beginning, we have a puppy. We love that, right? We love the fact that your dog gets excited to see us, jumps up. So what do? We pet them and we go for it. So what are we doing? We're reinforcing this behavior. So then all of a sudden, when you don't do it, now they're looking at, oh my God, and they start stressing out. So one of the things with crate training, one of the things I tell people, that it's a mistake that we've made when they were younger. So we need to teach our dogs to be comfortable when they're on their own, when they're by themselves, when they have time alone that can be satisfying to them without you being part of the equation. So it's really just when you come up, for example, I say, when you leave the house, what do we normally do? Now you're missing your pet too. So if you call him over, you get with some hugs and kisses. Good. Good. You kiss. Oh, God, I'll be back soon. Goodbye. Bye. And then you walk out the door. Oh, my God.
This is actually my voice when I do that. So
what do you expect? Of course, they're sitting at that door waiting for you to come back in and not now. And the anxiety is building up. And now they're going to go on their rampage. And, you know, they're not going to go after just their chew toy. Those very expensive shoes you left under the couch, they're going after them. And it's almost Murphy's Law. They will look for the most expensive thing and make sure that's what they get. And then what happens when we come home? The first thing we do, they're running up to us and we pop, give them jump, let them jump up on us. Then we give them a treat and they give pets and good boy, good girl. Oh my God, I missed you so much. Okay. So all we are creating this monster, this beast that can't be without us. So the goal is that when you come home, when you leave, all right, first of all, if it's really bad, talk to your veterinarian. There's some medications, even something as simple as CBD or my chill, which is a natural, you know, valerian, passion flower, chamomile, melatonin, L-tryptophan, all know to kind of calm them down. But when you're home and they're with you, you have to purposely have them stay when you get up to go to the bathroom, you run to the kitchen to get something to drink, whatever. Whatever it is, they can't run and follow you all the time. Give them a bone. Give them something to chew on. Do not pet them. Do not let them jump onto the couch with you. All right? Teach them that they also have to be happy in their own shoes and their own paws. Now, when you leave, don't make a big deal of leaving. If anything, give him his toy, give him his bone, go to a different part of the house, and then quietly, quietly sneak out. Or if they're crating, you put them in the crate. They have to learn that being in the crate is not punishment. Being in the crate is something, it's their own den. It's their own security. You can't always be their security. And then kind of slip out. Then when you come home, what I tell people to do is don't make eye contact. Walk right by the dog as if he's not or she's not even there. And they're going to look like, what the heck with him? Right? And that's what you want. Then it could be 20 minutes later. Maybe they'll find you in the kitchen. Don't even look at them. Just give them a pat. Good boy. And then walk away. Don't be so important in their lives. Let them be, let them find something to soothe them because you're not always going to be there. And then, you know, once you're they've settled, they're calm, then you can, you know, give attention again.
I know you see that, but
I know.
I know that fans at home are going, wait a minute, I'm not going to, if they're, if I'm home, I'm jumping. And I fully understand because I said that to him when he taught me this, but my pups right now are two of the best and they're huskies. So they're not mentally, right? You know, they're crazy. But because I listened to what you were saying and taught me, they are so much better than the others previous on how they act, how they are emotionally, and how they are as pets. And so there's wisdom and experience that you have done through the years that really help people. And it's up to us, the dog owners, to implement those in and really stay on point.
And it's not easy. So anyway, I sure have any more questions, which we have, as I said, Mark has been sure giving me dirty looks. Mark, you can count this as Farmer 501 and 502. So I just want to make sure that I have everybody waved. Hello, thank you so much for joining us. And it's great working with Mike because he is just, again, if we have, and you guys appreciate it because you're all pet parents like Mike is. You love your pets. That's why you're here. I can see you when you come into my office. If you don't live near me, you don't come to my office. I hope your veterinarian is the same way. And if your veterinarian has never been, ask your vet, have you ever been bitten? If he or she says no, I hate to say, look for another vet, but it just means they're not caring. You know, there was one thing, I went to a talk once because dogs bite. Cats bite. Cat bites are worse, by the way, than dog bites. Anyway, so this one veterinarian or practice manager got up there and says, they say a lot of things I don't like. But anyway, one was, you should imagine a plastic bubble around your head and you should never get close enough than that plastic bubble. And I'm thinking, what? Don't let a dog lick me in the face? Nah, that ain't happening. So speaking of that, it's so funny. Also, practice managers say that a veterinarian should never walk out into a busy waiting room or any waiting room. Why? Because everybody wants to get a piece of you and then it's going to slow your day down and it's going to put you behind. It does, I admit. But I'll tell you this, that I find when I walk out into a waiting room and if there are people there that don't know who I am, never seen me, maybe a new client, and they see how the dogs waiting to see me, how they are reacting with me, jumping on me, wagging their tails, so happy to see me, I could not pay for better PR than that. So I say, wait a second, I want new people to see this is me. I happen to love pets. I love your dog and your dog loves me. And that's what they want. They want a veterinarian who their dog is not afraid to come and see. And so the best way to show it is let them love you and love them back. And I have a slide that I show when I speak and it's a gorgeous yellow Labrador. I'm in the exam room with him. He's literally on my shoulders, big lab. And my tech who took the picture caught him like the tongue up on my cheek. And my caption is very simple. It says, we as veterinarians are very lucky because we could and should be doing without patients our MD counterparts would be arrested for doing of theirs. So anyway, have a happy Father's Day, everybody. Mike, I want to thank you once again.
Thanks.
Great. I mean, anytime you want to do this, you're more than welcome. And we'll see. Oh, and Titan is here. Titan, who's 6 years old, going on 12. And he is swimming, right?
Yeah.
Give your guy a kiss. Happy Father's Day. You're such a good kid. So anyway, how's the swimming? I saw you out in the pool. Good. We're trying to get my 5-year-old grandkids, my 6-year-old is now learning, but my 5-year-old learned at 3. His little brother is now 3, and now they're both swimming without floaties. It is fantastic. So anyway, have a wonderful week, wonderful day. Stay safe. Keep your pets away from the foods that are bad for them. We'll see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel here on Instagram Live, Pet Life Radio. And thanks much for joining us. Have a great week.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.